This is the Living in Mid-Bloom podcast, lighthearted and heartfelt conversations about what it looks like to live, heal, and blossom in middle age. I'm your host, April Pruitt. Let's get our bloom on. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me today. My guest is Jen Hall, and just an FYI, the interview took place in November, so when you hear us talking about different dates, that will make more sense. Quiet, Allie. All right, Allie. All right, let's get going. I am here with my guest, Jen Hall. Hi, Jen.
Hi, April. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Jen, I met you through Stacy Montgomery and through WESOS. That is the Women Entrepreneurs Secret of Success. And I think at the time I met you, were you working with them or for them? It was before you became president, I think.
Yeah, I was over the pandemic. I kind of stepped in to raise my hand at helping them get their marketing in order when everything shut down and they wanted to develop a virtual presence or a bigger virtual presence than they had. And I kind of worked my way up from marketing manager to leadership director to then CEO of the company. And that I think, wow, I met you right as I was stepping into being CEO.
Yeah, which is absolutely amazing. And I congratulate you on that, honestly. And just trying to understand, so were these paid positions? Because what I wasn't sure of is, were you hanging out with your kids at home? Were you focusing on the kids? And then you kind of found WESOS, or how did that happen?
So how it happened is, stepping back to about 2018, I have a spinal disease, and I had just had my second spinal fusion surgery because my neck broke. I have a degenerative disease that is not fun. Yeah, my dog brushed my neck and my neck broke, and I needed to have a revision of my spinal fusion from 2015. And then I needed to have my broken neck fixed and more fused lower. And I was kind of stuck. I was at home with my kids. I wasn't really doing a lot. I was an aromatherapist, and I was kind of teaching people how to find alternative pain methods because I was addicted to prescription pain pills with all of the surgeries I had. And so I was doing that, but I wasn't in front of people and I didn't know how to be. And somebody said, hey, go to this Christmas party with me, or holiday party, I think they called it. Go with me. I didn't know anything about it. I said, what's a WESOS? But okay, I'll go. And I walked in the door, and I remember the first woman I met was Ellen Cleary. And she opened her arms. She hugged me, didn't know me. And she's like, you're home. And I said, oh, this is kind of cool. And so I started networking with them. And I started speaking at meetings about what I was doing and how I was working through pain. And I have children at home. And then they asked me to be a chapter leader. I did that. And then the pandemic, I raised my hand and to volunteer with marketing. And then they're like, okay, well, we can pay you a little bit and a little bit more, and then maybe pay you for this. And then I took on the job as CEO. I did it for a year. I knew it wasn't going to be a full-time career for me. So I did it for a year and stepped out after my contract was over, and I was paid for it. And it really allowed me the resources, the knowledges, and that experience to then launch the businesses that I have today and am working in today.
See, that's fantastic. What great experience. And clearly they saw you as a leader. I mean, you're showing up for the first time. Mm-hmm. You're welcomed with open arms, which I'm not surprised about, because all the women involved in WESOS and other organizations have just been so warm and opening, because I met all of you through Stacy. So the fact that they were willing to say, you know what, let's give her a chance. Let's do this. And of course, and you were right on board. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I feel the same way. I wouldn't have met the women. I know we're mutually connected now with more than a few women that Stacy's connected us through, or if I've introduced you to, you've introduced me to. And that's the power of networking, especially with women entrepreneurs that are so dedicated to getting their name out there and making a big difference in the world.
It's powerful. Female power, women power. Before we go into your 10 businesses, and now, wait a minute. Okay, let me just be sure. Okay, you have three kids.
Yes.
One husband.
Yes.
Three dogs.
Three dogs.
Oh, I got that right. Yep. Zero cats.
No cats. I had a cat and I have two birds.
And oh, a that's right. Cat. I have a really two sweet birds. Yep, I haven't seen much of them lately. It's all about the dogs. The birds are,
I don't have them out yet because the dogs are puppies and they're big. They're big. They're like 60 pound puppies. So the birds are out. When they're out, I'm holding them because I don't trust the dogs yet. Not to attack them, but they're toys.
Right. Exactly. Playing around and 60 pounds on a tiny little bird.
So the birds will be featured in my Instagram stories often that disappear after 24 hours. It's hard to take some posts of them now.
Yeah.
The dogs just want to play with them.
That's awesome. Where are you from?
I am from Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio.
Oh. So,
small town.
What city is nearby, if I can think of a larger city?
Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
Or Cedar Point. People go to Cedar Point, the amusement park. It's near there. So that's where I grew up.
Okay. Okay. So how did you get to Illinois?
I got to Illinois because I was in my senior year, end of my junior year, early senior year in high school. And recruiters started coming into my AP English class and Army, Air Force, all of them. And I was going to blow it off and say, no, that's not me. I'm going to Kent State University. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do all these things that I was kind of expected to do. And one morning I woke up and I knew my dad's friend was an air traffic controller. And people think that's person that's on the jetway with the cones in there or the orange things.
Oh, no, those are the people in the booth that are holding lives in their hands.
So my dad's friend did that. And I said, that's really cool. I want to do that. And he's like, well, the best way to do it is to go through the military and get practical experience being an air traffic controller. So I went around to every branch of service. And I said, I was 17 years old, 18 years old. And I said, I want to do this. I want to go in guaranteed with this job that I don't want to go to boot camp and have you say, no, you can't do that. You go be a gate guard or something. And I want to know what the highest paying civilian air traffic controller is outside of when I get out of the military. What's the best way to do it? And it was the Air Force.
Okay, let me just say this. Balls.
Yeah. Ball, right? Balls.
You got balls. Okay.
I did. And at the same time, I was the first woman in my family on both sides to go in the military. And no one had been in the military since my grandfathers had been in. So
yeah, that's a little unusual, you know, but it sounded like you were, why air traffic controller? I mean, I know you were like, well, I can do this as opposed to what's expected of me. What was the other route?
I got a high off of airplanes. I got a high off of seeing the noise, the feeling. And I said, I feel like I want to also fly jets. I want to do this. And people kept saying, you can't do both. You can't do that. You'll never be able to do that. And I'm like, no, I want to. This is cool. And I think what fueled me is because so many people told me I couldn't do it.
Isn't that amazing? It amazes me that people can open their mouth and just try to dim your dream. I mean, why?
They did. And you know, Air Force, you have to go in and you have to be in pretty good physical condition before you go in. So it has a pretty stringent weight and height. And I was 5'7" and I think I weighed 150 pounds. So that's pretty small.
Yeah, that's good.
But I was overweight. I was considered overweight. And so I had to lose weight to go in to the Air Force.
Wow.
And people were like, oh, you're never going to do it. You're never going to do it. Or you can never do air traffic control because you were terrible at math in high school. Even my teachers, everybody, my parents, my grandparents, they're like, you're going to die. You're going to go to war. And that fueled me. That fueled me.
No doubt.
Once I got to basic training and went through basic or boot camp and air traffic control training school and flew the jet and did all the things. Then people
were like, oh my gosh, Jen. Yeah. Wow.
So, don't tell me I can not do something.
That is fantastic. That must have felt like the biggest high in the world. How long did you have to train before you could actually fly?
I flew backseat in an F-16, so I wasn't actually piloting. I mean, I had control of the stick
at times. That's huge.
All of my training was through air traffic control. So I was working the base where I flew on the jet. I was working at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, and I was training air traffic controllers. I was working civilian airliners. I was working fighter jets. I was working tankers. I was working stuff I can't even talk about. So I learned the characteristics of these airplanes and the speed and what they do. And so then being in the seat, and I got to ride in quite a few in the cockpit or FAM flights that they call them in some of the big refueling missions. I studied a lot. And then I had to go do some, like, what happens if you have to eject out of the airplane and put on this thing and we're going to pretend we're going to parachute jump. And if you get ejected, this is what's going to happen. So I had to go do that stuff.
Oh my gosh. How many other women were going through this training? Do you know?
So few. I mean, it's still that way today. I think as you go in, I don't know if you're going to, I'm going to say a word. You're either a bitch. You can edit that out if you need to.
No, so that's fine. That's fine.
Or you suck and you're going to wash out. So the women that were in with me, very few, maybe six or seven, maybe out of 80 men. And if you showed that you were strong, you were labeled as a bitch. And if you showed that you were weak, you're get her out of here. And it wasn't like that for the men. So we had to work twice as hard. And it's still, I think my husband's still an air traffic controller for Chicago at his facility. I think there are six women and maybe 50 men. So it's still that way.
Wow. Yeah. All of this mano y mano stuff. And you think that, well, we know things have changed, but I will tell you, it seems like the world is going a little bit backwards.
It is. That's sad. It is.
So how long were you in the military and what was next?
So I had enlisted and I knew I was going to do 4 years and I was going to leave. But then when my 3 year kind of came up, I had met my husband in boot camp and we had dated on and off throughout. We weren't engaged, but we met in boot camp. We were at different bases. And I'm like, maybe I will re-enlist. Maybe I will. And I had orders to go to Saudi Arabia. And my orders got canceled because the woman that I was replacing, it was just going to be a 4 month stint. She was locked in a closet by Saudi Arabian air traffic controllers because she was a woman telling them what to do. And in their culture, they didn't like women telling them what to do. So my orders got canceled. And then I had orders to Kunsan, Korea. Yes, yes. That's how it goes. So the orders got canceled and they sent a man in my place. That's how it is. So when I had orders to Kunsan, Korea, and I was like, all right, I'm going. This is really cool. And right around that time, I started having neck pain and shoulder pain. And I thought it was just a stiff neck. I was stressed. And then September 11th happened. And my orders got canceled. I was about to go see a doctor for this neck pain that I kept having. Like I was waking up with a crick in my neck every single morning. And my appointment got canceled because the world shut down. And September 11th was very much like how COVID was. We couldn't go off base in our uniforms. We couldn't do everything. And my time was up. My time in service was up for active duty. And they said, you are stop lost now. We are stopping the loss of all air traffic controllers. So even though your date of separation is coming up, we're not letting you go until further notice. We don't know when, how long, because they wanted to stop the loss of all of us getting out. And so I actually ended up staying in a full year past. So I was in for 5 years. And that last year, I was just wanting to get out. I was engaged at that time. I was wanting to get married. My husband was in the desert. My fiance didn't know where he was. My brother was in the desert, didn't know where he was. And I said, I can't do that. I can't raise a family like this. I want it. So, and I was in having these pains. And I said, I can't sit and control traffic in this pain. So I got out thinking I was going to be a civilian air traffic controller.
Right.
Because I'm a woman, you know, we're a minority. And my husband and I said, we're going to apply. Whoever gets hired first, that's where we're going to go. And he is half Korean. So he got the minority male, not white preference. And they said, we don't need the female quota. So they hired him. And my resume was like that, where his was, you know, my was very long and his was very short. So he got hired over me. And then they didn't offer me a job until I had just had my first son who was born at 26 weeks in the NICU. I was
and, oh my goodness.
So I turned it down. And by the time I was ready to go back, I was too old. You can't start back in once you leave when you're over 30. And I was 31.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So that was
why am I saying unbelievable? Of course. I mean, my dad was in the military for 20 years and he's had, you know, interesting stories as well. So,
yeah.
So obviously, then you moved where he was sent. And was that in Illinois?
Yeah, so he was hired for Chicago TRACON, which is Terminal Radar Approach Control. So he sits in a dark room. It's actually in South Elgin, Illinois. It's not even in the airport or in Chicago.
Yeah, I know where Elgin is. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's quite a distance, and he sits in a dark room and they control O'Hare and Midway, all the aircraft leaving, departing, a lot of the satellite airports. So that is what he has been doing since we got out of the military. Oh my gosh, right after September 11th, the year after September 11th. So I think he's 25 years in service with, including wow. his Air Force.
Such a stressful time. And then these decisions made for you. I think I just saw an article in New York Times. They were talking about air traffic controllers and the stress and that they're overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Is your husband feeling that?
Yeah. And the pandemic really, they took a loss because nobody was training to come in new air traffic controllers. I think they're not even 60% manned right now. So he's been working 6 days a week. And that's to keep all the flights in, you know, that's to keep everybody flying. So he's been working 6 days a week. Not a lot of people are coming up through training. Oh, it was shut down for almost 2 years. And it takes about between 3 and 6 years to get fully certified to work as an air traffic controller, depending on where you're working. So, yeah. And I think it was God's blessing in disguise that I'm not an air traffic controller, because he can come home and he has the weight of his issues and I can understand it. And I'm not going through it along with him. So I think I look at it now as terrible as it was going through it. I can listen to him and know what he's going through. And if he comes in with a really, after a bad day, I know what to say, what not to say. And so
that's a really good point. Having somebody at home to be supportive like that, and mm-hmm. your hands are full anyway. Yeah. It's hard to think about that when something you think is your passion, your dream, and then life happens, all these different things occur. So let's talk more about your health issues. So your neck was broken.
Yeah.
They repaired it.
Yeah. So when I was having those pains in the Air Force, I finally did get a doctor to see me. It was 2013 and I got out around 2003. So that was a big expanse. They kept telling me, it's in your head, like making me feel like, oh, you're just a stressed out mom, or you're just this, and it's in your head. And I needed something to do. So before this diagnosis, I went back and got my yoga certification. So I went through yoga and I said, this is too restful. So I was like, I'm going to teach yoga at a gym. So I was doing fitness-based yoga and I got my spinning certification. So if you've ever seen people on a spin bike yelling at people,
oh my gosh.
I did that. And I was walking out of the gym one winter, I think it was 2013, and there was black ice and I didn't see it. Obviously it was black ice. And I grabbed onto my Suburban and my arm went one way and my body went the other way. And I thought I tore my shoulder. And finally this one doctor listened to me and she said, I'm going to look at your neck because I see in your chart, you've been complaining about your neck for 10 years. And they found out that my discs were gone. My bones were crushed. I had this disease that my dad has that I think his dad had, a lot of the men in my family have. And they're like, yeah, you have this and you have to have a spinal fusion because right now, no traction, no physical therapy. We need to put pins in or your spine's disintegrating. God. So they did a surgery that had me out and they had me on April. Oh, so shit. Many, I was on morphine. I was on Dilaudid. I was on Xanax. I was on Lexapro. I was on so many medications. I became so addicted just to function on them.
Yeah.
And so that was my journey with my disease. And I reclaimed my life. I had to stop teaching yoga. I had to stop teaching spin. I wanted to reclaim my life again. And so I'm like, I'm going to go back to school again. find a better way to manage my pain. And that's when I became an aromatherapist. And that was when I really became a true entrepreneur because I was selling my services. I was working with essential oil companies. And then my story, how I found WESOS.
And you're a naturally strong personality. I mean, when you knew what you wanted, you know, you didn't back down from the military because a lot of people would have been intimidated. And you were like, I'm not taking no. This is what I want. They can laugh in your face and it doesn't really matter. You did it.
I was inward.
Right.
I'm like, don't tell me I can't do something. And I knew, you know, at the time I had a daughter, I have two sons and I have a daughter. And I always had it in the back of my head that I don't want my daughter and her friends have to fight like I did for so many things. And I see the women that I'm friends with have fought, whether it's, you know, just being a woman or being a woman of color or being of a certain religion. Like, I don't want that for the women that
Of course not. I mean, having children is, you know, to me, the most difficult job in the world. And partly because your heart and soul isn't in them, you know, to watch them struggle, go through pain in any way, shape or form, it is already just such a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
And also, though, taking care of yourself and everybody around you. So I've always admired people like you and Stacy that you just like, well, we're just going to, well, here it is. I guess we'll just dig in.
I mean, what are we going to do? Like, there's days I get up and it hurts to put my feet on the floor. Like, it physically hurts so much. And I know it's going to be short-lived when I have a flare up. And I just have to sit there and think like, no, these are my dreams. This is what I want to do. And if I don't show up, I'm only person I'm hurting is myself.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have people that I have a responsibility to, but I think we have to be honest and say like, hey, it's a bad day for me today. I'm still showing up, but it's a tough to let everybody else know that you can still function, even though days are really hard.
Yeah.
And you just have people in your corner to help you.
That's the reality of life. And your kids are learning that. It's like, yeah, mom's here. I'm having a bad day. Maybe I'm not going to do everything I wanted, but you need to know this is what's happening.
Yeah,
and then they can do this, and they can do the same for you, you know, being that honesty. So I know when we were trying to do this interview a while back, you had just had some surgery.
I did.
And all I kept thinking, you know, and you're like, well, I'm waiting to hear back from the doctor. And then I may, and I thought to myself, wait a minute, I am not going to interfere with you possibly needing to go to your doctor. That's what I thought. Is she nuts or just...
It's a story of my life. I feel like I had endometriosis. I was diagnosed in, I think, 2000.
Oh, gosh.
Right after I had my first son. So 2004, I was diagnosed and I was having horrible periods.
Oh,
I'm talking, I couldn't leave the house. Ooh. They were lasting 10 days. And for years and years and years, take an ibuprofen, go on a diet, don't exercise, right? And then in March, I started to hemorrhage. And I went to the emergency room and they gave me medication to stop it. And they're like, we're just going to put you on a prescription medication so you'll bleed less. I'm like,
wait a minute. Right.
So then they went in, they scraped out the endometriosis. I had a surgery. It didn't work. It came back worse, worse, worse. And they're like, okay, you need a full hysterectomy. So I had a full hysterectomy on July 4th. And so I had everything out, my uterus, my ovaries, my fallopian tubes, my cervix even. And so I went into menopause that day.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I've been dealing with that, but I'm not public in the fact that I'm going to tell you every single nitty gritty detail.
Yeah.
But I'm public in the fact that like, hey, I'm going through menopause. It's really hot. I'm going to take my shirt off right now. I'm really hot as I'm talking to you because I know that there's somebody sitting. I'm a group coach, business coach, somebody sitting on the other side of the Zoom screen also feeling that way or has running around or has cramp something. So I'm always like, hey, be yourself because you can still run your business and support each other. So,
This is what I'm going through. FYI, if you see sweat pouring off my face, it's because I'm, you know,
flash and I want to stick my head in the freezer right now.
Exactly. It's an issue of sharing versus complaining. And frankly, I think it's okay to complain sometimes because I mean, because life is freaking hard and going through that.
Vent, let it out.
Exactly.
And we provide that for our people. And that's what I like.
Yes.
Plug in you. Say it. Let's move. So,
exactly. I've learned a lot from you guys from that when I was going through my TIA, is that so many things going on emotionally as well as the physical. And but it got to a point when I thought, okay, I'm actually sick of hearing me talk. This. Let's get on, you know, let's get rolling. Let's get back. I have always appreciated the support of you guys. So, okay, I want to talk about your 25 businesses. Okay, wait. So you're not involved with WeSoS at all?
I'm a member. I'm a lifetime member of WeSoS.
Okay.
So I was speaking. We had a chapter in Frankfurt, and it was just when we were starting to open things back up after the pandemic. I was at a panel, and the woman who was running the meeting, she goes, Jen, I want you to meet Anna. Anna, meet Jen. You guys are going to have a lot in common and become best friends. And we're like, okay.
Sure, so, lady.
We went on a one-on-one, and we're like, you like Disney? I like Disney. You like Harry Potter? I like Harry Potter. You like romance novels? Me too. And so we became friends. And when I knew that I was going to be stepping down as CEO from WeSos, Anna had this idea that she wanted to do for a business. I had this idea, and we kind of combined them into this called Ambition to Success. All of our ideas are carried out through chips and salsa at a Mexican restaurant. So that's a fun.
I love it. That's the best part.
And we said, there's so many coaches out there, and some of them are, you know, $49 a month, and some of them are $15,000 a month. And we wanted to provide a coaching service that is accessible to women just starting off, or women who are hobbyists for their business, or maybe women who want to turn a new leaf and really make this their career. So we formed Ambition to Success. And Anna's idea was, let's make ourselves stand out, make ourselves stand out. We're going to send every one of our clients a box every month. We're going to call it an entrepreneur experience box. And we're going to put office supplies and books and fun stuff. So kind of like a subscription box that's going to go to every client. So that was what makes it unique. And we did that, and we love it, and we're coaching, and we've got a lot of women that we met through networking that are in it. We love it, and we love to read so much. And we're like, why don't we do a box for books? That's not such a departure. And so we're just having the best time. We're launching in December, Sizzling Reads, and we're doing a subscription box for romance novels from zero.
I love that. So how does that work? Because at first when I saw it, I thought, one, your marketing is just hysterical. I mean, it's great. Talk about getting people's attention. I mean, honestly, I'm like, how does she have time to do all of this? You know, frying the bacon, bringing it home, and making sandwiches for the next day. So,
So it's fun. I think that the Ambition to Success is like our serious business, the group coaching, the business coaching, and a lot, all the things that we provide. And the Sizzling Reads is just so fun. I mean, our homework in quotation marks is reading spicy, smutty romance novels and rating them on scale, and doing watching TikToks and watching reels and seeing kind of what our style is, and just ripping off the band-aid and doing it. And it's fun and funny, and it's not work when it's like that. So I look forward to it.
So that's fantastic. And I love that you and Anna were brought together in such a natural way. And it's just obviously, it just worked. So is there anything else that's coming up that you guys are going to be working on? Or is there like a campaign set for the new year?
Yeah. So Ambition to Success is moving right along as we have been this year. We're not really adding a lot. We're not upping the prices because we still want to be accessible. So we're going to see, we're going to take a look back through the year and see what worked, what didn't, what times for coaching times worked, what didn't. But it's going to be full steam ahead into the new year. But Sizzling Reads, we actually start selling on December 15th. So we're going to do a special launch price to get everybody into that. And it's been really fun. My biggest thing I want to say to people, if they're working with somebody, if they have a business partner, is you have to, number one, have a contract, get a contract. Even if it's your best friend or your mother, get a contract. Say who gets what if you dissolve the partnership.
You're so right. It has to be professional.
You have to. It's kind of like a prenup for a partnership. Yeah. And then you have to give each other honest feedback. There's ideas that I have and Anna doesn't like, and Anna has and I don't like. And we talk them through and we don't get offended. So I think that makes this partnership between the two of us with these two businesses so strong. And then we get excited about like the things that I'm good at marketing on social media. She's really good at newsletters and the behind the scenes stuff and the finances. So we kind of share the responsibilities of it. So we're not,
everybody's got their little niche in the business.
So it's been great. Like work getting up. I enjoy what I do for the very first time in a very long time. I enjoy every single day I get up in the morning.
That is fantastic. So how are you feeling physically? I know you've got some bronchitis going on right now. How are things with your neck and your spine? How are you doing?
I'm okay. I think most days I manage it. I do a lot of herbal remedies, CBD, essential oils, all those things. So I manage it. So when I have a flare up, I think I know the signs. Usually feel them the day before. I can start feeling things and I know, okay, tomorrow I need to not go out. Tomorrow I need to not do this. And I need to be okay with, I'm not letting people down by doing that. When I'm taking time for myself, I'm out longer. So I'm okay. I have days where I feel really great. I have days where I'm in a lot of pain. Those are few and far between now, thankfully. But there's always a lingering bit of pain every single day. The menopause stuff, down to maybe 2 or 3 hot flashes a day instead of 25. That's really good. All of those symptoms. I have a really great group of women that I go to talk to that they've been through it. And so the menopause stuff has been good. And I'm not having a period anymore. So that's great. It's not taking me out 9 or 10 days a month.
The one thing that, you know, obviously is the concern is the addiction, because that is so, so not just in the news, but just in the world. And the information or lack of information about how these drugs can really affect you has harmed so many people. So how did you deal with that and how are you dealing with it?
I didn't know I was addicted. I didn't know. I knew I was in and I had complications after my very first spinal fusion surgery. I had my first surgery in 2014 and my vocal cords were paralyzed actually with all my surgeries. So when I woke up, I couldn't speak. I had no voice and I was aspirating my food. So it was going down my esophagus. So I was in the hospital for quite a bit. And so I was getting IV Dilaudid, which is like heroin. I was getting it every couple hours. When I was ready to go home, they're like, are you in any pain? And I'm like, I feel pretty good. So they stepped me down to like a Norco or something like that, which is a huge step down. And I got home and all of a sudden I felt like I had the flu. I was aching, my body.
Withdrawals.
I didn't know. I thought I was sick. And they were like, nothing's wrong with you. Nothing's wrong with you. And so they readmitted me. And when they started giving me the medication and I'm like, I feel normal again. And that's when I started to understand.
Oh my gosh.
And they're like, okay, well, we're going to put you back on Dilaudid and morphine and all this and all this. And I remember like, I felt like I woke up one morning and I wasn't feeling good. And my kids were little and they were yelling, they were hungry. And I'm like, here, just eat cake for breakfast. Here's chocolate cake. Go eat cake. Leave me alone. And it was at that moment I was like, these drugs are controlling me. And so I had a neurosurgeon, I had a neurologist, I had a spinal doctor, but I went to my neurologist because he is from India. And so he was more working with like non-traditional medicine methods. And I said, I want to get off these pills. And he helped me. And it was
Here's what I hate is that none of them recognized it.
No,
but
none of
you recognized it yourself.
None of them did. So he helped me step down from it, knowing that this was a lifetime that I was going to have of this disease and I was going to have more surgeries. And so now when I have the surgeries, I know I need the pain medication, but I work with my doctors to where I can't get to that point where I need it to function. Like I just need it to take the edge off from surgeries. So I've had several surgeries since when I knew I was addicted and I have taken pain medications, but I take them for absolutely only if necessary. And then I throw the way of the bottle because I know I guess it's addictive personality. I know if I start taking it, my body is going to need it just to feel normal. So I have to stay away from them.
Well,
and I don't drink either very much for that. Yeah. I don't know if alcohol would do that to me. I've never been a big drinker, but I kind of socially every once in a while because I don't want to test that theory.
Right. You know, you being so insightful about that, but then this delicate balance you have to deal with each time you go into the hospital and being very cognitive of how you're feeling, what doses they're giving you.
I can't have that rule my life again. And it makes me wonder how many other women are there that are just going in for procedures and this is happening to them and they don't know. Because you think
you took the words right out of my mouth, Jen. How many people? Yeah.
That's not the case. So it's sad.
It is. I had a procedure done. I knew nothing about drugs and I was given Oxy. I was taking it. And then I called my doctor and I said, I've run out. I need more. And he's like, well, you don't need any more. And, you know, I didn't understand that. And then you hear all this stuff in the news. Thank God it didn't get any worse. I was just lucky. That's all that was. I was just lucky. Right. So you're right. The number of people, the number of women that get addicted or are maybe not aware or present because they've got so many things going on in their lives. This is an important message, Jen, and I appreciate you sharing it. Sure. It's such an important issue. And you must have been feeling so vulnerable going through that. I mean, you're having to tell these doctors the reality of your life, which is addiction, and they couldn't see it.
No, and even when I did see it, then once I said that word, then I was looked at as like, oh, you're just a desperate housewife and an unhappy mom who wants pills. And I'm just like, I'm screaming at you to listen to me. I had a seizure one night. We had just gotten adopted my little Yorkie Sparky. He was teeny tiny. He's like 6 pounds, 7 pounds. I wasn't feeling good. I was in a lot of pain one night. And in my bathroom on my first floor, my kids were tiny. I had a seizure and my little dog went and woke up my son, who was young and he's got autism. My son had to call 911.
Oh my God.
I went into the hospital and I had a medical alert bracelet on because I was on a medication for something, a gabapentin I was on, and I had a medical alert bracelet on that said, if anything ever happens to me, don't give me Narcan, because if you give me Narcan, it'll send me into withdrawals from gabapentin, and then I could have all these, something happen.
Oh, wow.
Medic and the ER staff said, oh, she's just an addict who needs more pills. And they gave me Narcan, didn't look at my bracelet, and I crashed. Like, there was some lawsuit stuff with the hospital with that, but they immediately thought, oh, she's seeking pain medication, then she's this. And that was like the start again of me, how I was in the Air Force. Like, no, I'm not standing for this. I'm not standing for being treated like this. I had like the head of the hospital reaching out. I had bills being covered. I had the doctors and the paramedics calling me to apologize to me. It wasn't enough to me.
No.
But I remember being in the ambulance and being kind of so out of it and being trying to show them my medical alert bracelet. And they gave me Narcan twice. They gave it to me twice, thinking that I was OD.
I can't even imagine. I'm sitting here pissed they are risking your life.
Right. Risking my life. And even my son had my bag of medication. He's like, this is what my mommy is taking. And they were full pain pill bottles. Well, they weren't empty. They were full. Everything was full.
So, right.
You know. So
these assumptions. Here's the thing. So what if you were? The bottom line is.
What if I was, right?
I mean, what does that mean? That she doesn't get the care she deserves? That you're going to ignore what's right in front of you? Right. And say you're sorry because you're not doing your job and you're, you know, making assumptions about who this is. And that's the thing that people have to realize. When people start doing that, making these assumptions, people don't get treated properly. That's just the way it is. Right. And that's what happens with people of color, women, housewives. When did that become a bad word?
A stay-at-home mom.
What is that? Right. You just sit at home, drink your coffee, add a little rum to it, and and that's your life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible. It's terrible. The stereotypes people put. I was just having that conversation with Stacey this morning with everything that's going on in the world. And Stacey was talking to me. And she's like, as a Black woman, that's how I felt almost every day of my life. And the religious oppression and just being a woman.
Yeah.
We're still fighting for this stuff. It's we shouldn't have to fight for it. And we need to be honest with each other about these experiences.
Yeah.
Because more than one of us is going through it. Somebody is going through something that we say. So keeping silent isn't anybody any good.
And I know everything that you've shared regarding this part of your journey, so many people are going to understand that. I think so. And it's going to help people because they need to know it doesn't look a certain way. When you're struggling, it doesn't mean that, okay, so they must be poor. They must be that. It's anybody that's walking around this world is going to be overlooked for whatever it may be. People are going to make assumptions about you, judgments about you, which is such a difficult thing in this world, especially now with so much fighting and anger and hate, knowing that it spills over here in the U.S. We see that happening. I think with people I know, they may be Muslim, you know, and cover their hair. And it scares me for them because there's ignorant people out here.
I'm scared for a lot of my friends who are out and speaking out about their side of things. And I'm like, I can't even, I don't even know how to feel. Like, I just have my experiences, but I don't know how it would feel to be, to not love who I want to love, not practice the religion I want to practice, not live where I want to live. I don't even know.
I can't. I know. I know. It's tough. I feel grateful. Like I said, we've all gone through things. And it's funny. It's like almost every year at Christmas when I was younger, the cousins would get together and talk about the year. And we would talk about different racial issues we would run into because you don't have time to talk about that stuff every day. No. You're just doing your thing. You do it, you know, and you don't think about it. But it all, it builds up. And we just start sharing, not complaining, just sharing, you know, what the year was like. And it's always kind of like a relief to know that we're supporting each other and that it's not an issue. Like you said, it's just you get to vent and then you just move on.
You get to vent, and that's nice doing it with like people and of your peers who experience it. Mm-hmm. I also like to talk to people who, you know, a lot of people don't experience the, what I went through as a woman in the military. I don't experience what it's like to be a Black woman in the United States. And I like to get around different women, different men.
Yeah.
And talk about it. And then teach my kids, like, hey, you may be saying this, but this is what it's coming across as to other people.
Right.
And so I think we need to have more of these roundtable discussions with other people and just listen and not judge what they're going through. Just listen.
I love that, you know, roundtable discussions and just be curious and be open. You know, if you can be open-minded and curious, to me, that's the best thing in the world. It just opens doors. And a little kindness, you know, a little kindness can't hurt in this world.
Yep. We should run for president. I would touch that. But anyway,
Can you, is there anything? We're screwed. I think I'm going to become a Canadian citizen, you know, like, I know Cindy's like a Canadian citizen and now she's becoming, you know, a citizen.
Can we move to France with Cindy?
Exactly. Is there anything else you want to share or anything else that you want to end this conversation with?
You know, I think I just want to end this conversation. Thank you for having me on here, April. I appreciate it. And I love what you're doing and the stories that you're telling or the stories that you're the platform that you're providing for these women to tell. I think my parting advice is women, mainly women, because I work with women, we need to stop fighting each other and start learning about each other so we can teach the younger generations to be better and do better. We don't need this nonsense happening
so
year after year.
So true. Leading by example. Goodness. Yep. Jen, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for being vulnerable, letting us in on the things you've experienced in your life. And your resilience, all of that takes work. And I understand that. And I know that. And you walk the walk. Like you said, you have some really tough days, but you acknowledge those days. And then you make a determination for yourself, how that day is going to be, because that's the only thing you can do is you have to put yourself first, because then you can't do anything else. So I thank you very much. And this has been a real pleasure, Jen. Thank you, dear, so much, and you have a beautiful day.
You too. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you for joining me today on Living in Mid-Bloom. I hope you found this episode insightful, meaningful, and maybe it's given you something to think about. I invite you to share your positive reviews or ideas on topics you would like me to touch on by leaving your comments on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, Podchaser, or Podcast Addict. We are all divine beings who just want to be seen, heard, and loved. Have a beautiful day.